Dan Levy.
So happy to be here.
Great to have you here. I've had the whole gang here.
I'm the last one.
I know.
So hopefully I don't disappoint.
No, you should. I know you won't. Is this going the way you thought it would? We look at, you know, already a couple of awards this year, lots last year, season four. The show just keeps on getting more successful. Is this how you thought this was going to go?
I don't think I ever thought about how it would be received. I think you hope, obviously, that people like what you do, but I think for us, from the very beginning, the goal was to make the show we wanted to make and hope that it connected with people.
But did you foresee, if they were to be offered season four, I have enough stories in my brain that I could
You
make.
Hope!
Yeah.
But that's the thing about TV, and I think that's what... It's such a tricky world because you really never know when the stories will run out, and you hope that you create sort of a foundation in terms of a narrative that has life to it. I've broken season four.
Right.
And it's, in my own opinion, my favorite season to date. So I've never been more excited to shoot a season of our show.
Then it shall be my favorite season as well. So you're not having that Larry David moment where you crawl into a corner and just worry about the next... You know, 12 episodes.
You do that when you're going into the right. into the space where you sort of create everything, but I am thrilled with what we've come up with, and it's always not what you expect. I always sort of go into a season thinking, okay, well, we'd like to explore this arc for this character, and we want to see this person
make a change in their life.
Make a change in this area.
This
and
relationship.
It's never what you think it would be.
Let's go back a little. I know your dad was back and forth between Toronto and Los Angeles a lot when you were growing up. Was that more or less how your life has always been, or was it you were sort of mainly in Toronto?
Oh, no. I'm a Torontonian through and through, And it's interesting because it wasn't until I became an adult or someone who had any kind of perspective on life that I realized what kind of a sacrifice that was in terms of him deciding to keep us in Toronto and really shelter us from a life in
Los Angeles. Sure.
And I think
it's rare.
It is rare. But I think for my dad, he's always been, I mean, his family comes first and always will. So it's never really been about career then family. It's always family then career. And I'm sure that it must have affected the work at some point when you're just not
his
in the hub of it all.
Sure.
But, you know, we're really, I've sort of grown to become very aware of that kind of sacrifice that he made for us. And it's been, I mean, I'm glad that he did because I loved growing up here.
But is that your back and forth now? Is that kind of your scene?
We're mainly here shooting the show, but yeah, I try to get back. Well, I mean,
the reason I follow your Instagram and I just feel like you are all over the world.
I like
here.
To travel when I'm not working.
Right.
I think when you're working on a show, it's such an insular experience, and you have to be so focused on it that the minute that I don't have to do that, that's not doesn't sound right.
I know.
The minute
I'm not
working, for me, travel is where I get inspired. So at any opportunity, I'm somewhere. And, you know, obviously with the relative success of the show, there's a lot of people who want to chat about new ideas and opportunities. And, you know, Los Angeles is sort of where you sort of go.
It's interesting because I think people would think that's great. And suddenly, you know, you've got this attention and people are start handing you scripts and ideas and things. But at the same time, it's then you got to make that right decision of what that next project's going to be.
Yeah.
It's a bit tricky.
And, you know, this show will always be the priority until the story is finished.
Right.
And I have an idea of when that would be. It's really, I think it's really easy to sort of be swayed by other opportunities and in a way overestimate or underestimate what you have in front of you.
Right. I understand that.
You know,
yeah.
And I we have so much more story to tell, and I just love it so much. And that, you know, until that's done, that will always be the focus.
Do you get to be the smug Canadian in LA right now?
Is smug Canadian a thing? Is that even a thing that
It might be these days a little bit.
Oh, gosh.
Just the political.
My home and native land being I proclaim my Canadian-ness with a sense of pride more now than ever before.
Fair enough. We won't necessarily call that smug, necessarily. But
it's a national pride,
I think. I get it, 100%. When did you know you wanted to get in show business? Because that's a step that I think the son of a pretty famous person, that's a real decision to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up, I always liked performing. I would always sort of put on shows for my parents, whether they wanted to participate or watch them.
You and
different story.
You and Marty Short.
Yeah.
Although I think he performed in his attic.
I have a feeling that the shows that I was putting on weren't quite as eccentric as his.
Right.
But I always knew that I wanted to perform. And I think my biggest inhibitor was insecurity and sort of a fear of a lack of confidence. Okay. And for me, that was a really big struggle through high school. I was in the high school plays and wrote all of them and sort of staged them. And then when I got to university and it came time to sort of decide, okay, do you want to continue to pursue...
Where'd you go to high
acting?
School?
North Toronto Collegiate North Institute. Toronto Collegiate.
And how was that?
Now it's an apartment building or something. They tore it down.
And have churches all and schools school just become condos. Yeah, right.
For some big
But
condo.
University happened and you
and
just
I
started
opted
to feel
out.
That. Oh, you
and
did?
And I was too scared to audition for the theater programs and instead pursued a career in film production, which very early on proved itself to be not something I liked or was interested in.
Right.
Film school is a world that I was just not.
Well, and it's also a world that is sort
you
of...
You have to really love
You do. Film and making. And they have this construct of what success is what a film is. And so there's
some kind of film in that that right. needs to be told. Right. The world of like film school is just the strangest, cliquiest, weirdest.
Well, I claim to know a fair amount about film, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't dare want to even get into an argument with those
crew. Nobody knows more than a film student.
Yeah, right.
It's amazing.
Yeah, right.
And then, 3 years into that, I got a job at MTV and gently walked away.
Right.
I'll use that instead of dropped out.
A lot of people know you as that host on MTV, or did for a certain amount of time, MTV Canada. Then there's this bit of space. We see appearances in films and different television shows. And then this whole new audience has got to know this David Rose character in Schitt's Creek. Was it a reinvention for you of your public persona? And did you have something to prove based on how people knew you through MTV?
No. I mean, the funny thing was, in the, I think it was 8 years that I was doing MTV, there wasn't a day that I worked there that I didn't think deep down this wasn't for me. I never felt
It's a long time to feel that way.
It is, but listen, you're like 21, you're sure. on MTV.
We actually met at a TIFF party when you were just a kid doing that.
Oh, God.
And I remember we were at some Holt Renfrew or something.
Wearing like some bad
different hair.
Outfit and big old glasses.
Big glasses,
something.
Yeah.
Yeah, apologies.
It's good, it was fun.
But yeah, I just... You're going through the motions and you're getting some success and some notoriety and yeah. teenagers seem to know who you are. And when you're, in your early 20s, that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
And so I wrote it out because it was a skill to hone. And for me, anything I sort of get involved with it's about doing the best job you possibly can, whether it was hosting or in this case, show running a television show. But
I only say that because I think a lot of people were so surprised at the sort of depth of this character.
Oh.
It was like this different guy that we were kind of meeting.
Yeah.
It was just a really...
I think he was in there. I think hosting is almost... It's an almost opposite discipline in the sense that you don't have to hit marks. You don't have cameras that are strategically placed. You talk to a camera. Sometimes you read off a teleprompter, but a lot of it's conversational.
Right.
And when I left, I said, you know what? I'm not going to host again.
Right.
It was great, but I'm going to actually pursue what I've wanted to do since I was in high school and never had the confidence to actually follow through on. And that was to act and, in this particular case, create a world where I could have that opportunity.
Seriously? The room was cute. This place is sweet.
I am personally offended by this place. I don't know what you think is nice about it.
How did you create David?
I'd like to say it was through a lot of hard work and thought. But I was writing the show up until the night before we started shooting our first episode.
Right.
And it was around 2 in the morning, and I had a 6 a.m. call time, and I remember thinking, A, I don't know my lines, and B, I don't know who this person is.
Oh, wow.
And I think for the longest time I was putting off the reality that I would have my very first scene would be opposite my dad and Catherine O'Hara in a television show that I had a hand in creating, and the whole thing was so overwhelming that for a long time I think I just pushed it away.
Lord.
It must have been through the process of writing the show and creating the show that he crept into my brain and it worked his magic, because when I sat down and we shot that first scene, it just happened.
That's so great.
It just, he just sort of came out,
and you've been able to build him.
And I've been able to sort of build and shape him, and hopefully give him some growth.
Because we see, you know, the clothes, certainly his sexuality is a real conversation point.
Sure.
His sense of humor, for sure. We see his sense of humor in a sort of way that we don't see that with a lot of other characters. Such an easy character to just laugh with.
Having a chauffeur. I always felt safe with Armando behind the wheel.
Well, I'm sorry for wanting to take my family out for an afternoon drive.
Okay, well, maybe you could just journal those impulses next time.
Or simply ignore them.
Despite what could be potentially controversial about him, the show sort of deflates that in a way. It's not so much even acceptance, is that the Roses don't even seem to notice what others might perceive as eyebrow raising about him. There's just this, so he gets to live in this world of beyond acceptance. It just is.
You know what I think it is? I think it's an absolute ownership over the fact that he just doesn't give a damn about anybody's feelings except his own, in a very loving way. But it's just, I remember sort of being asked, like, does the character have any part of you in it? Mm-hmm. And I really don't think he does, but I do think that there's an element of, like,
it's a little bit disappointing to me.
Well, I think the reactionary element of David is in me.
Right.
It's like if I wasn't so concerned with how people would perceive me if I were to just show how disappointed I was or upset or angry.
Right.
If that world was just free and open and I could react however I wanted, I think that's where David Rose lives.
Right.
In this world of just
total freedom.
If you asked a question that I didn't like, I would just roll my eyes and move on.
And I know
I'm too polite.
It was in season one and two that the pansexuality question got asked of you a lot. And you know, I just read something in Flair magazine, but
sure.
I think way back from season one even. Is it still fun to play with that? Or do you feel like that's like, okay, well, we've established that. And
no,
now we're just
I think
into
for us,
else.
It's, I mean, the pansexuality has always been treated with an element of
fun
yeah. and
putting words in your
and
mouth.
Ease, I think.
Right.
I mean, we didn't ever want it to be forced down people's throats. We didn't want it to ever feel like an after-school special. We didn't want to educate people.
Very special
I guess
episode.
For us, the education comes in just presenting a very accepting environment for this character. His parents have always accepted him, and treating that relationship with the kind of nature that it deserves.
Yeah, so normal.
Yeah.
Like
it shouldn't, because it isn't. It's like people's sexuality. It's like
it's not about the guy or the girl that's there. It's that whether he's parked in the right place.
Exactly.
Or not,
it's whether they vibe.
It's really more about them and their needs.
Whether they're connecting on a really vibey level.
Right. Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy got a lot of attention in season one, certainly kind of, getting that attention there. And understandably so, comedy legends, that's fair. But I feel things have really changed because you talk to fans now and it's so often David and Alexis who are the ones who are quoted and talked about and the ones where you latch onto their jokes. They've sort of got that millennial zeitgeist going on right now.
How many people have you dated that ended up in a hospital?
Excuse you, David.
I guess that we're doing something right.
Have you felt that shift where it was, there was a lot of focus? Obviously, you had these big marquee names there, but now I feel like the thanks and the tributes are sort of being shared around to the whole cast.
I think that's, we have such a strong, great cast. And to me, I just feel so great that they're all being recognized for the amazing work that they're doing. I think naturally, when you have Catherine and my dad headlining a show.
Yeah.
You're tuning in to see them and to see them play. And I think the more that people buy into the show and not just the marquee names attached to it, the more they were able to sort of open up to the fact that, there's a colorful cast of people around them that are doing their part as well.
Oh, yeah.
And in terms of just reaction, it's been really something to see the kind of joy and love that the fans of the show feel for it. It's just, I've never experienced anything like it.
I can tell you, I think the ultimate litmus test has to be when you go, okay, I've got a week on Tuesday night, what am I going to do? Well, I can't miss Schitt's Creek. And I think that's one of those weird things where I used to feel that way about certain, NBC on Thursday nights and different shows. It's rare that I feel certainly about a Canadian produce show to some degree,
right,
where I go, that's absolute destination television, and I got to get there.
Such a huge compliment.
Well, it's absolutely true, and I just feel more and more so as the years have gone on. In particular, within these characters, David and Alexis, you and Annie, the siblings on the show, you share these characteristics both in your voice cadence and some of your lexicon, and as well as your body language.
Right.
And I'm really surprised I haven't seen that used more in some of these family situation comedies, because it's so effective to see the two of you do some of the same things.
Annie and I have, I think from day one, have had this very strange, intangible chemistry that worked.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. I don't know. I'd love to say that it was all scripted. It's not.
Right.
It's very much sort of something that comes alive when we're working together. And I think, too, there's such an ease to the show, generally speaking. Like, there's no egos on the show. And, our goal as producers is to make sure that people have fun. We're making a TV show. This should be fun and inspiring for people. And they should feel like they're working on something that they love. And I think that kind of environment allows for almost an openness in terms of performance that you might not have if you were in a slightly more stifled environment.
So you're telling me that you didn't set out to sort of say, okay, they're both going to do this one thing with their hands, or they're both going to address each other in the same sort of cadence.
Are you talking about the lawyer scene where we're talking? There's one scene where we're both behind a counter talking, or behind a desk talking to a lawyer, and we're doing the same kind of hand movements.
I remember that scene, and I remember even just the way she'll just come at you and you'll address each other when you walk into the room. Right. It's got a very similar style to it.
It happens on the day.
Right.
I would love to take credit for it, but I would feel like a fraud.
Yeah. Your dad's gone out of his way, both in interviews and in award events like the Candies, to talk about how proud he is of you. And I heard him just the other day on a podcast saying that. Is it always peaches and cream with dad, or do you guys ever kind of get into it over some of the writing?
I think naturally when you're working with a parent, you have to find the way to make it work. Right. And we come from such different worlds. My dad is very thoughtful and paced.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find very complimentary words for slow. but he's very thoughtful.
Right.
And I'm like reactive and, just a little bit quicker. So for us, finding that sort of
that rhythm, that rhythm and pace together,
where we can both sort of use our what we bring to the table in a way that is constructive and helpful is both a challenge and a really great thing to have to work through.
You have to have some patience.
I think we both have to have some patience. Right. I can be very snappy.
Yeah.
And, we have to meet in the middle. But I think the show is such a product of the two of us coming together and for the greater good of the show, saying, okay, I want this and I want this, but what does the show need? Right. And that's why I think there's never been any major conflict, because at the end of the day, through conversation, one person concedes to the fact that either one person's idea is slightly
right.
more in line with, either a show idea or, a decision in terms of production. And
well, let's jump on that for a second, because your dad appeared on one of the recent episodes of Mark Maron's WTF. And
I was
and
so jealous.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
It was great to see that he was on there. Yeah. And I love hearing about Toronto in the old days, so that was fun. But he talked about how in season two, he was able to walk away from that writer's room and really let you kind of take over some of the lion's share of the work there. And that was interesting to me for a couple reasons. One, just a real vote of confidence that you could take those reins. And two, I really felt like in season two and season three, this show really started to find its legs and find its rhythm and find, season one was great at establishing these characters, but I don't know. I mean, did you find a bit of freedom in suddenly saying, okay, now I'm running this baby.
Listen, it's not lost on me the opportunity that I was given in season one.
Mm-hmm.
I think to not have show running experience and to be given the opportunity to show run a show is a huge risk that my dad took. Him being in the room for that first season was just us finding our footing in terms of obviously establishing what the show is. The first season of any show, I think, primarily is about laying a foundation for the seasons to come.
Right.
If you are
style of comedy, the characters,
style of comedy, yeah. the voices, yeah. And just again laying a world. Like for us, the first season was about circumstance. The family moves to this town. Now what? And in our goal was by the end of season one, we've laid the groundwork so that season two, it doesn't have to be tied so much to the circumstance. We can start exploring backstory and interrelationships with characters we've never seen before. And I think by the end of our first season, my dad had gotten a sense that I wasn't going to screw it all up.
Right. And just drive it into the ground.
And also, I mean, he had to drive into work every day, and yeah, like, right. he doesn't want that.
He kind of made that impression, though.
Yeah, in the interview. A combination yeah. of like him not just wanting to just golf
and be a little more retired,
and also give yeah. me, you know, some space to see where we could go with our second season. But yeah, I mean, it's been a tremendous learning experience for me, and one that I've certainly not taken for granted.
Following me on this idea, I've spoken with all three of the Roses, and now I'm here with the fourth, Catherine O'Hara, Annie Murphy, your dad. Everyone agrees that this was a departure from the unscripted Chris Guest films that Eugene and Catherine, of course, starred in. But at the same time, as Schitt's Creek has evolved, it does seem to share those same comedic sensibilities in a way. It's not about jabbing you with jokes. It mm-hmm. really is about building off the characters that yeah. we come to know. You know, in Best in Show and Waiting for Guffman, the funny comes from the DNA of who these people are. And so there seemed to be this push to say, no, we're not that. But now I'm feeling like it actually is closer than we thought.
I mean, it's interesting because I feel like my dad's philosophy through his entire career has been to focus on character.
Right.
And not write a joke, but have the character in some bizarre way be the joke. But they have to be real and they have to be grounded. And I think what he brought to the Christopher Guest movies in terms of just the writing that he did on it was that sensibility. And I think that's what he shared with Chris, was a non-negotiable need for character to be at the center of the comedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what we've done on the show. And I think the tricky thing in terms of writing is a lot of times you want the characters to serve as a story. You've come up with a really funny storyline and you're trying to fit the characters into the story. And every time we have a struggle when it comes to just trying to break an episode, it's because we have the character servicing the story right. and not the story servicing the characters.
Right.
And for my dad and I, we both share that. I mean, I've probably inherited it through some kind of osmosis or something, but it's my favorite kind of comedy, and I think it's the richest kind of comedy, and
I agree.
Hopefully the most affecting.
Yeah, I agree. I think the laughs are just that much deeper when you're just so involved
yeah,
in that character.
Yeah, because human nature is yeah. like, that's deep stuff that everyone can sort of relate to. So.
And I know you've spoken about this before, even when we see, you know, those heartfelt moments between the mm-hmm. Roses, it just feels so good too, because we've gotten to know them, we spent all this time with them, and they're not just hitting you over the head with
no,
with
and
jokes.
I love that, like, in this show, it's like a mother saying to her son, I love you, is now like a heartfelt moment because it just doesn't happen.
With the Roses.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Back to this political idea. BuzzFeed just called Schitt's Creek the best show since Parks and Recreation. And I bring that up because it dawned on me that during season three, that Schitt's Creek was something of an escape during election season, mm-hmm. during, you know, the last couple months. And I think there's a lot of great comedy on television, but for some reason, this show really feels removed from just the heaviness of the culture right now. And so was that sensibility built into the blueprint of the show? Did you guys really want it to be that escape for people?
Because I think it's interesting now with social media, you can see sort of an immediate reaction mm-hmm. from people in terms of what they feel. And in this past year, there has been a shift from people saying, cool show, think it's great, to yeah. thank you for making me laugh. And that is, there's been a shift in terms of what people need, I think, from TV and comedy in particular, is they need an escape because it's really bleak out there right now. And what we wanted for this show was for it to always be a safe place for the viewer. And by safe, I mean making sure that our characters always act in character, that we never take them too far outside their boundaries, and that when you watch this show, it is a safe place in terms of just, you know, you're going to get your laugh, you know, you might get a little tender moment here or there, and you know that these people, that the intentions of the show are always good, and it never goes down, the path never gets too dark, And that was a concerted effort. And, you know, for season three to be happening and sort of coinciding with everything that's happening in the States right now, it's lovely that we can act as some kind of respite from all of it.
A bomb for just a moment.
Just a lovely utopic half hour. That's right.
It is. Absolutely.
Laughter.
Time for five questions with Dan Levy, the writer, producer, and star of television Schitt's Creek. Are you ready to go?
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. Your favorite rose. Favorite rose
as in a flower or a human being in my show?
In your show.
Alexis.
You love Alexis.
I love Alexis so much.
Oh, I have gum in my mouth.
That's disgusting.
Can you take it?
No, I don't want to take it.
I'll put it right here because
Twyla
will get it.
Can I explain?
Sure.
I feel like Alexis was a character that we never wanted to give away in the first season. We wanted her to stay in her box. She was the last one to really change. But over season two and season three and what I know of season four, you get to see this person who at first started out very sort of almost an archetype of a socialite become a realized person.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people like Alexis, and I wish that they had almost had that happen to them so that they could find out what it is they actually want from themselves.
And I think Annie is just loving.
She's so brilliant.
Being able to do that too. Would you ever adorn any of David's clothes in real life? And if so, please say it's the drop of crotch pants or the male skirts.
I will have you know that some of those clothes, I will not reveal which ones are my own.
Those are your own clothes?
Some of them.
Some of the knits?
Some of them. I mix and match them into the season. And some of them I will be taking home when the show is done.
The answer is yes.
It's a soft pair of drop crotch. They're made of cashmere. I don't even know. I'd wear them around the house. They're comfy.
What is your absolute favorite place to visit or thing to do in Toronto?
I've had really good times at Cocktail Bar, which is a bar on Dundas, I believe. And I have my oldest friends, and, you know, we get together and
just
have some drinks.
So you can see, what is my next question here?
What is my favorite cocktail?
That is a bit weird, you have to admit. That would be my next question.
A Negroni.
Negroni, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Leaves a little dry on the palate. Negroni.
Favorite cocktail. Keeps you clear-headed, but also loosens you up a bit.
Favorite jazz artist, and I'll let you know that Catherine said Count Basie and Tommy Dorsey, and your dad said Oscar Peterson and Joe Seeley.
Chet Baker
it is.
Mm-hmm. That voice.
So beautiful.
Those skills.
Yeah, absolutely. Great trumpet player and great singer. And Dan Levy, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.